I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch. My guests are Shazi Visram and Jessica Rolfe, co-founders of Happy Baby. Happy Baby is a frozen organic baby food company that provides an alternative to homemade food on the one hand and processed jar food on the other. Happy Baby is sold in ice cube trays, and the portions are in the form of frozen cubes. Happy Baby was launched on Mother's Day in 2006, and the product can be found in stores nationwide, including Whole Foods and Super Target. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having us.
Shazi, you graduated from Columbia Business School looking to start a business. Why did you choose to enter the baby food business?
It was actually during business school that I had a conversation with a very close friend of mine, and she had twins. And she is just the most incredible woman. I really respect her in every way. And here she was telling me that she was a really bad mom because when she was pregnant with her twins, her doctor had said, well, you know, if you really want to feed them the best food when it comes time to eating, make all of their food fresh from homemade organic ingredients. And what happened was that life happened, and she had twins, and she just wasn't able to do it. And she was faced with the alternative, which was processed jarred foods. And she was really disappointed in herself for feeding that food to her babies. And it was the first time I had ever really thought about it. I'm pretty health conscious and really care about natural living and have a distaste for processed foods myself. And for the first time, I thought, wow, in our country, where a third of our children are obese, we actually train our children to eat processed foods from birth. And I thought, there's got to be something better.
Why frozen food? When I think of frozen, I don't think that it's fresh.
Well, you know, frozen food is actually fresher a lot of times. And what you're doing when you're freezing is you're locking in the nutrition, the taste, the texture, and the color. Mm-hmm. And it's actually quite a common practice in other parts of the world.
So what was the first step that you took in getting the company off the ground?
Well, I wrote a business plan. I worked on it while I was at the business school. Started networking with people in the industry. Met a lot of people from Whole Foods, which was pretty instrumental. And just started talking to people about how they had started their businesses and really tried to get an understanding of what would be needed for the operational side of the business.
Now, after you graduated from business school, how did you support yourself while you were getting the company off the ground?
Well, I have to say I was pretty stubborn. For some time, I refused to ever look for kind of a corporate job. It was a really tough time for me because I was basically living off my credit cards. So I would go to the grocery store and, you know, I'd buy my peanut butter and my yogurt with my American Express, and it was kind of sad. And
because you didn't have the cash.
Because I didn't have the cash, and I had more than $100,000 in debt. And the student loan payments were going to kick in. And so it was a pretty tough time. And right around this time, I'd gotten offered this deal to bring in money to sell a majority of the business, which wasn't even creating a product yet. And I was seriously considering it. Mm-hmm. One of the amazing things that happened is that I met this beautiful angel of a woman who literally called me one day as a friend to say, you know, I know you're working in the food industry, and I heard about you through our mutual friend Anne, and I have some people that you should talk to. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And she told me her story, and turns out she was an entrepreneur and she had sold her business. And I thought, well, let me tell you where I'm really at. Maybe you can give me some advice. And I kind of told her the deal, and I told her, you know, what I was about to sign off. And she said, you know, Shazi, why don't you just wait a week? Let me talk to my lawyer and see if we can help you. And a lot of people say they can help you. And a lot of people give you advice that's really hard to follow because they don't realize what it's like to wake up in your shoes and know that you're living off of, you know, borrowed credit. And she actually called me a few days later and said, you know, I need your bank account information. I'm going to wire you $20,000 so you can kind of get your life in order and make the right decisions when it comes to funding your business and find the right partners.
Wow. And did you also, you also sold real estate for a little while to make some extra money?
I did. One minute you're talking about molding and hardwood floors and wide planks, and the next minute you're talking about, you know, pea puree. To the surprise of many of my colleagues at business school, I sent them all emails saying, hey, I'm selling real estate, and hopefully it's going to fund the launch of my company. Please support me. And I started selling real estate in Brooklyn, and for 6 long months while Jessica was in the office, I was selling real estate and working really 80-hour weeks, just trying to put it together and make enough money to live on and be able to give something back to the business.
And when we say the office, it actually means we had thousands of offices across New York, which was basically Starbucks. And so every day, you know, our rent was $1.29, I think, was the cost of the small tea at Starbucks.
We worked out of our homes. So, you know, my cats were really early partners in the business.
Crawling over my keyboard was my favorite.
It's warm.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guests are Shazi Visram and Jessica Rolfe, co-founders of Happy Baby. Happy Baby is a frozen organic baby food company that provides an alternative to both homemade food on the one hand and processed jar food on the other. Some flavors include Gobble Gobble, which is a blend of veggies, turkey, fruit, and millet, Yes Peas, and Thank You Carrots. Shazi and Jessica launched Happy Baby in 2006. Now, Shazi, where are you from?
I actually grew up in Alabama, and my father is from Tanzania, and my mother's from Pakistan. But I consider myself a New Yorker now at this point.
What was their reaction to your wanting to start this baby food company?
Well, I think I get my entrepreneurial drive from my family. In my eyes, they're kind of the ultimate entrepreneurs, and they literally have that story of coming to this country with $20 and have really just been supportive of me all of my life to get the best education so that I could kind of do everything that was possible with my life. And they've had their ups and downs with this business as well, because they've seen me work on it since, 2003, 2004, and we didn't launch a product until 2006. They've put all of the meager savings they've had into our business, and they show support in as many ways as they can.
How did you guys meet each other, Jessica and Shazi? How did that magic reunion happen?
So that's a great story. So at one point, I had talked to someone at Odwalla to get an understanding of how they were doing their distribution.
Odwalla Juices.
Right. And it turns out that the woman that I talked to at Odwalla had remembered me, and she turned out to be a common acquaintance of Jessica.
And Jess, what were you doing at the time?
I was actually at business school, so I graduated the same year that Shazi did. And I was really passionate about social responsible business and entrepreneurship, but I just didn't have a great idea. And I was actually an on-campus sampling rep at Odwalla, so I was giving out samples at frat parties as a side job during business school, and met this woman, and she said, "There's this other woman that you need to know. I know you're passionate about organic foods. My internship was at Whole Foods, and I ended up working at Whole Foods after business school." And she said, "Here's this number, here's this woman, call her." And I honestly, we've always tried to track down this woman from Odwalla and thank her, Lisa Pradell, but she must have gotten married or something happened and we were never able to find her again. But it was a really very serendipitous connection. So one day I was at, Whole Foods and really thinking, is this, what I want to be doing in terms of, I really wanted to be an entrepreneur and really start something from scratch. And so, I just took it upon myself to say that today's the day I'm going to call Shazi. And when I called her, she was immediately receptive and we had this instant connection and on everything in terms of the values of the business. And I loved her idea. And from my vantage point at Whole Foods, it just looked like a brilliant, brilliant concept.
Yeah.
So excited.
Now, Shazi, you had a partner prior to Jessica, which didn't work out. How come that didn't work out?
I guess it would be your classic case of not having the same goals and values. He wasn't willing to take any of the risks that Jessica has always been willing to take. And it just didn't work on so many levels.
Mm. And so when you were talking to Jess, were you at all skeptical or kind of concerned that the same thing might happen again? Or what was your reaction to her?
Well, once you've been burned that way, you kind of remain scarred. And the thing is with Jessica, she is such an open and giving person that even after the first phone conversation, I felt like I was telling somebody, and I've used this analogy before, I was telling somebody about a dream that I had the night before. And rather than getting a nod and yes, I understand, or oh yeah, uh-huh, I can kind of get that, I could immediately sense that she could see the dream. I could feel that over the phone, and she finally came up to New York to meet me.
So Jessica, you come to New York City with your husband, you change your life, you quit Whole Foods, you move from Texas, and you're not making money either. How did you survive during this time in New York?
Basically, everybody in my life recommended that I not pursue this. nobody really understood.
Including your husband?
Including a little. In the beginning, he was excited, but also there was some, maybe you could work part-time. You know, maybe you could sort of do both at the same time. And I just knew, especially with everything that Shazi had gone through with, you know, and the fact that she was, you know, on the edge in terms of finances and needed to work real estate, that one of us needed to just be fully just focused on getting, you know, this next step. And so my husband and I decided that we together moved to New York, and it's a pretty tough place to just move to.
Now, where did you live when you were in when you moved to New York?
Well, I had a friend that offered me this great deal, and it was in Interior Brooklyn, and it was a place that he was going to renovate. He was just being very generous and trying to offer us this opportunity, but it turned out that there were. It was infestated with roaches. And so when we showed up at around 10 o'clock at night after driving, you know, forever from Texas with all of our stuff in our car, and then it just started becoming clear as we turned on the lights that this place was just not somewhere you'd want to sleep. And we didn't really know what to do. And we looked at each other and we were like, well, we have our camping gear and we could just set up the tent, because the worst thing is to wake up with a roach crawling on you and you just can't sleep. So we have this joke that we were like rotisserie chickens, because there was no air conditioning, that we would just rotate around in our tent and get cooked by the heat. But at least we didn't have any roaches.
What were people's reactions to the actual product when you started making the product?
Well, actually, we've been received really well by moms and retailers. So the moms really appreciate our food because it actually looks and tastes like real, delicious, fresh food. And on the retailer's perspective, you know, a lot of them really want to appeal to this young mom. Mm. There's a lot of value in the lifetime consumer of a young family.
It's interesting that people took to it right away, because if you look at it, it looks like blocks. You know, they're ice cubes, essentially, different colors. So it doesn't look like sweet potato looks until it melts.
Well, once a mom knows what it is, they're really excited about it. Our challenge is getting people to know there's something for baby in the freezer of your local grocery store.
Right. And how do you get them to the frozen aisle versus, you know, to the Gerber's jar food aisle?
We do a lot of local marketing events. We reach out to local moms groups. We give out coupons, and we do a lot within the store itself. So in the aisle with the baby food, we try to put up as many shelf talkers as they'll allow us, which are little signs that say, think outside the jar, look inside the freezer for something different. But, you know, it's an ongoing challenge, and we certainly have a long way to go.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guests are Shazi Visram and Jessica Rolfe, co-founders of Happy Baby. We'll hear more from Shazi and Jessica coming up. I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch. My guests are Shazi Visram and Jessica Rolfe, co-founders of Happy Baby. Happy Baby is a frozen organic baby food company that provides an alternative to homemade food on the one hand and processed jar food on the other. Happy Baby is sold in ice cube trays, and the portions are in the form of frozen cubes. Happy Baby was launched on Mother's Day in 2006, and the product can be found in stores nationwide, including Whole Foods and Super Target. On the marketing front, what were some other creative things you did with the lack of, given the lack of resources you had in the early days?
Well, we've had a really successful Happy Baby photo contest, and we actually launched it within about 4 weeks. We had more than 2,000 entries. By the end of the contest, we had about 3,500 entries and 160,000 photos of the most beautiful little babies on our website.
Aww.
And the grand prize is to actually be on one of our 8 boxes.
Very resourceful, grassroots type of marketing. How about the operations? Jess, you're the COO of the company. What were some of the challenges on the operations front?
Well, first of all, it's just really, really hard when you have no money and you have an idea, especially in baby food, a very vulnerable population, to get anybody to agree to make your food. Mm-hmm. And so one of the hardest things that Shazi and I dealt with was really trying to find a facility that we would be able to rent out and be able to make our very first Happy Baby products. The hard part was that because we had decided to make a cube tray, that actually makes it very hard to manufacture. So our very first, we basically, Shazi had a friend that she had connected with in all of her networking and who had a frozen children's food company that was all natural. He agreed to take a risk with us. And it was the break. We were jumping up and down. We were squealing. We were hugging each other after we asked him. It was almost one of those early breaks that made it such a difference. And so he believed in us, and we were able to make our very first units in his facility. It took all day, and I think we made 200 packages that were samples to Whole Foods, and we used those pastry containers that you use to put frosting on cakes, and we just squirted out the little sweet potatoes. We squirted out the carrots and the apples and all the different varieties. We just made all these different samples for the buyers at Whole Foods.
Now, Shazi, on the packaging front, what were some of the mistakes made on the packaging front?
Well, one of our early mistakes, and there have been a slew. One of them was that we wanted each individual cube to be 1 ounce, and we get our first shipment of our actual ice cube trays, and we start filling them. And next to the filling machine is a little scale, so that you can make sure that you're putting in the exact amount that you state on the package. And so we fill all the cubes, and we realize, well, we're 85% under what's said on the package, and we realize that we made all of the cubes 1 ounce, rather than allotting for the additional space we needed to be able to fill it, leave a little bit of room, and then put the film on top. So that was one of our early blunders.
What else? What's an example of something not going according to plan?
When we were just about to launch nationally with Super Target and do our regional test with Super Target and launch nationally with Whole Foods, our co-packer, this place that we had so lovingly and caringly found that believed in us, the founder actually left the company because it was bought. And so we had bought our machinery and were so excited to do our first production run, a real production run. And we were sat down in the VP of operations office, and he said, "This is going to be your last production run." It was one of those moments where your stomach is just on the floor somewhere and you just feel like throwing up. And so we then got into our rental car outside the plant and drafted an email that was the most pathetic, pleading,
begging
email, like our business, our dream, the babies across the country. It's in your hands. And do with you will what you will with us, but basically know what you're destroying if you're going to let us go. And so we were able to convince him to give us 3 months of a transition, and we were able to find another facility to make our food. But that was incredibly, incredibly stressful. It was one of the most stressful times of our business.
Walk me through the typical day in the life of your job.
Well, Jessica and I live in different cities now.
What city are you in?
I'm in New York. So I get to the office, and really the kind of the sales and marketing team, sort of the support team, is here in New York. And we spend the day going through various marketing strategy for launching new product, how we're going to set up demos in various Whole Foods stores, anything that requires kind of legal attention kind of goes through our office.
Don't forget how much time we all spend raising money.
We spend quite a bit of time on the phone trying to find the new perfect investor. For instance, yesterday I got to the office a few hours late because I decided that the pictures on our cereal box didn't look that great and I was going to reshoot them. So I did a little shooting session at home with the cereal.
Jess?
It's hard to say a typical day, and that's what I think we love so much about what we do, is that it's so varied. But I and our operations manager, Stephen Messia, oversee every single production run personally, and so constantly on a plane, constantly traveling. And what we found is that it's really hard to find a facility that cares for you. So that's one of the hardest things. So we're there the four days leading up to the production run, and then we're there for the production run. So really every week I'm on the road overseeing to make sure that our product is made in the perfect way, that it tastes delicious, that we get as many units as we can out of a production day, because that affects our cost significantly. And really, ultimately, what we find is that the person that cares the most is me and Steve and Shazi and the company and Happy Baby. We care how our product is made more than anyone.
And what city do you live in?
I actually live in Boise, Idaho.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guests are Shazi Visram and Jessica Rolfe, co-founders of Happy Baby. Happy Baby is a frozen organic baby food company that provides an alternative to both homemade food on the one hand and processed jar food on the other.
Some flavors include gobble gobble, which is a blend of veggies, turkey, fruit, and millet, yes, peas, and thank you, carrots. Shazi and Jessica launched Happy Baby in 2006. Happy Baby's website is happybabyfood.com. We take for granted that the product tastes good. Did you do any focus groups with babies in the early days to make sure they would like the Please Peas? What is it called?
The Yes Peas?
Yes Peas.
We made all of the recipes. I started doing this while in business school, making a ton of recipes and just handing them to all of the people I knew that had babies that could do taste tests and give us results. Really, babies develop their taste buds very early on, their taste preferences and their profile. So with babies, actually, a lot of our foods, they're really readily accepted, and what it always takes is a few different times to get them accustomed to it, but babies will end up liking whatever you give them over and over again.
Mm.
But I will say that every single one of our flavors is absolutely delicious.
Speaking from your personal experience, do you ever eat it for dinner or something?
Oh, absolutely. We have a black bean banana quinoa called Mama Grain, and that one is just really delicious in yogurt. And we've heard some people take the pear puree cubes and have after dinner vodka drinks with those.
During production run, it's so busy, and Steve and I work on the line, so we do the job because we don't want to pay for labor during that day if we're there anyway overseeing it. And we just try and sneak a tray of baby food or two when we can. And Steve always says, I really need some more meat in my diet, poor guy. But we eat the baby food all the time. The flavors are so unique, so we use quinoa and millet and amaranth, all these really specialty grains that a lot of people have never heard of, but they're gluten-free and they're allergen-free and they're super nutritious and delicious.
Now, you're really operating this company on a shoestring. How did you go about raising capital?
Well, we initially put together a business plan, and we went out to our friends and family first, and to other angels that we had met through our networks, through business school, and we just put it out there. And no amount of money was too small to get a piece of our company. So we had investors that came in at, $2,500, and we had the big ones that we would get really excited about coming in at $50,000. And we cobbled together just enough to get the company going and for what we thought would last for a little over a year.
How much money did you end up raising?
That first round, we raised $550,000. And what we found was that the demand for our product was so great and that we actually, we expected to go national within 12 to 18 months of launching. And that happened actually within 5 months. So we realized that we had to go back to the drawing board and start raising even more money, which has been kind of a major part of our lives.
Tell me about your rollout. Now, typically, or sometimes, when a company gets off the ground, they roll out in the state and then regionally and then nationally, whereas in your case, you kind of leapfrogged that and just went straight from local to national. How did that happen?
So really, our original vision was to launch in New York and build a network there. And then when the demand increased, we could maybe expand to the East Coast and then eventually go national. And what we realized is that a category was being created in the frozen baby food. So there was another company that had launched as well with more money, and they were going after every single Whole Foods region, which was very motivating for us. We felt like if there was going to be another company with frozen baby food, that we would wanted to be right there, and there would be a category and a place for parents to go into the frozen food section. So really, both of our companies really pioneered this category. And so we started making samples for all the buyers at Whole Foods. Shazi had met many of them. I worked with many of them. And we just started making calls and pounding the pavement.
So ironically, having a competitor was actually facilitating your business. You were not cooperating, but your coexistence was actually beneficial to your growth.
Absolutely. That it's really hard to create a movement around thinking outside the jar, which is our tagline, with just one company.
Everything. I mean, the big thing about competition is you want your competitor to do well.
Yeah,
you just want to do better. And that's kind of the way we are about it.
Yeah.
Although sometimes we would revel in her failure.
And she in yours.
Oh, yes.
Tell me about that first Whole Foods meeting when you convinced them to pick up your product. Do you remember in detail what that was like?
I do remember one face-to-face up in Boston that was with an infamously tough buyer. and didn't think that we were going to get any kind of FaceTime at all. And we ended up getting almost 2 hours with this guy. And what was beautiful about it was that by the midpoint of the meeting, it wasn't about us as a vendor. It was more about, wow, you're really doing something to help nutrition for children. You know, that immediately gained us an ally sort of moving forward.
Now, did they know that your product wasn't ready for launch, or you just knew that your product wasn't ready for launch when you were presenting it to places like Whole Foods?
You know, that's a slippery slope. So we always kind of present it as if, you know, it's coming in the next 2 months. We're looking for a launch partner. We hope it would be ready in 2 months. We originally had a February launch date and then a March launch date. And then, you know what? Mother's Day is a really perfect time.
It sounds
so
perfect.
That's kind of what happened.
Now, you're not profitable yet, and you're extending your product line already. Beyond just the frozen foods, you have now a dry cereal product that you're launching. What is the motivation behind that versus just, you know, sticking to the frozen product?
We don't want to add products to the market that are just Me Too products. We truly want to innovate. And one of our partners is Dr. Sears of the Sears family of pediatricians. And he's a really innovative person in the sense that he understands what's going on with pediatric nutrition and what's lacking. And we had this sort of brainstorm light bulb moment with him once when he was doing a book signing regarding food allergies. And he said that, you know, a woman had asked, well, you know, my child has food allergies, will probiotics help? And he said, absolutely. And he started citing all of these studies. And he said, you know, if babies get probiotics early on, they're very less likely to develop food allergies, asthma and eczema. And, you know, I immediately thought, well, how can we get that to babies at an early stage where they need it? And he, you know, we started thinking about it, and it turns out that a really perfect vehicle is organic dry cereal, which is the baby's first experience of food. And for us, strategically, it makes a lot of sense, because if the mother is exposed to our brand with the baby cereal, then it's a lot more likely that she's going to know of us when it comes time to feed them solids and the purees.
So probiotic is a good form of bacteria that it boosts the immune system of the baby. Is that right?
Exactly. What it does is it creates a healthier, it creates a stronger digestive system.
Probiotics are also found naturally in breast milk, and they're not as common in formula. And so what we find is that probiotics are not there to strengthen baby's gut when they're ready to eat solid foods.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guests are Shazi Visram and Jessica Rolfe, co-founders of Happy Baby, a frozen organic baby food company that provides an alternative to both homemade food on the one hand and processed jar food on the other. Happy Baby's website is happybabyfood.com. Was there any piece of press in the early days that helped you along, that kind of gave you a jolt both in your morale and your business?
We remember the first piece of big press that we got was actually in the career section of the Wall Street Journal. And this was before we had launched, and it was through a random friend connection that had gotten a beat on a reporter and communicated that to us. And we were so ecstatic. I couldn't sleep all night. Shazi and I talked, we got the paper the very next morning, and there it was in the career section. It talked about how really pursuing your dream and really having a vision for what you want out of your life can create a very meaningful, satisfying career. Mm-hmm. And so it talked about Nurture Inc., which is our corporate name. We didn't even have Happy Baby as a brand name at the time. So it just spoke to the sort of general vision and what we were working towards. But it was so exciting.
It's been a hard slog for you guys, you know, getting this off the ground. Was there ever a point when you were like, you know, I think I'm gonna change jobs and go to something more stable and more lucrative? Have those thoughts come and gone?
That's funny. I think we both laugh at the number of times that thought could have crossed our mind. But truly, when you put something into existence and we look at this business as our baby, and I don't know how many mothers out there get frustrated with their babies and are probably at the end of their rope many times over during the day, but it doesn't really matter, because at the end of the day, it's your baby, and you're going to do whatever you can to make sure that, you know, that she's healthy. And that's the feeling that goes into our business. There are so many times that I think, you know, I could be making so much more money, and it would be a lot easier, and I could have just the life of a normal human being rather than having to sacrifice, it seems like, almost every little thing, from personal to financial to everything. But I just can't imagine going to work in a cubicle and sending emails all day and not feeling a lot of passion for what I'm doing. And there's really nothing more exciting than to see your baby kind of grow up. And I think we're in a fun place right now because we get to sort of see her as a toddler. So
the other thing that I would add is just that emotionally there's so many ups and downs, and we've really learned to try and separate and put one foot in front of the other. So when things are looking really tough and we have a problem that seems insurmountable, kind of say, okay, what is the one action, what's the one little thing that I can do today to move something forward? And that just almost separating your emotional self from your logical self is a really helpful trick for entrepreneurs. Because if you let your emotions determine what you think about the business, it's a tricky cycle, because one day you're a bazillionaire and then the next, you know, if things are down, it's over, and you might as well just, you know, go to bed and with a book or something and just try and hide.
Could you imagine doing this alone?
Could not. Shazi just got married and was on her honeymoon, and I missed her so much. I can't imagine doing something like this alone.
And it's great to have a partner that has such complementary skills. So together we're just like this really strong whole.
I know you both have husbands, but you're married to each other in a way.
Absolutely. I actually think of Shazi as my sister.
Oh. Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank
it's
you.
Really a pleasure.
My guests have been Shazi Visram and Jessica Rolfe, co-founders of Happy Baby.
Coming up, we'll meet Stephen McDonald, founder of Applegate Farms. I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch. I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch. My guest is Stephen McDonald, the founder of Applegate Farms. Applegate is a natural organic meat company that has been part of the natural meat movement since the early 1980s. The company's meat is sold in delis and natural food stores like Whole Foods and Trader Joe's across the United States. Stephen started Applegate when he was 32, and he used to be a vegetarian until he sold a healthy meat that even he would eat. Applegate supports over 200 family farms who are dedicated to the humane treatment of animals. Welcome. Stephen, before we go into the history of Applegate Farms, I'd like to know exactly what Applegate Farms is.
Applegate Farms is a natural foods meat company that provides about 130 different products, meat products, all cooked or processed, as we call it, bacons, hot dogs, deli meats, chicken pot pies, nuggets, items like that.
I want to understand what led you to this point, and I'm wondering what you were doing before you founded Applegate, which you founded when you were 32 years old.
Right before getting into Applegate, I was working for my brother-in-law, who is an Irish glassblower named Simon Pierce, who's got a small glassblowing business in Vermont. And I had been a management consultant in Boston, getting bored with all the kind of theoretical, wonderful ideas, but couldn't get my hands into anything. And this was 1986, at the point that his business was taking off and needed some support. So I went to work for him and just fell in love with the small business environment. At that point, I knew that I needed to do something on that level, which ultimately led me to Applegate.
You were working for Simon for how long?
I worked for him for about 2 years.
How come you didn't continue working with him?
Well, I left that because when I got in there, we started to turn things around, and I looked at this business, and I said, Simon, you're my brother-in-law. He's married to my oldest sister, Pia. And I said, Simon, you've got to cut me in on this. I'm your brother-in-law. And he thought about it, and the day I asked him, he was lying flat on his back with his back going out. And, of course, I chose that perfect moment to walk into his office. He's lying horizontal on the floor to propose this idea that he cut me in on his business, which he had started in the early 1970s. So he, in his very typical, charming Irish way, said, let me think about it, and came back a couple of weeks later and said, no, I don't think that's a good idea for you or for me. Of course, I was completely stunned that he wouldn't want me there. In retrospect, that's the best thing that ever happened to me, because it forced me out to go get on, you know, find something on my own.
Right. And so did you say, okay, fine, if you're not going to make me part of the management, I'm leaving. Was it that sort of vitriolic?
Oh, yeah, no. And it was obvious to him when he said it that we could no longer continue because I really crossed the equity line. And when you cross the equity line, you're in with both feet or out with both feet.
What did you do from there? You're like, okay, I'm no longer working for Simon Pierce, and I am now just going to go start a meat company? Or
no,
how did that happen?
As I said, before Simon, I'd done the management consulting. At that point, I was so frightened. I knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur, and everything that I had done had led me to that point, but it's still obviously a very scary step. So I immediately tried to retreat back into management consulting and had these interviews with these management consulting firms who in the first 5 minutes said, Steve, you do not want to go back into consulting. You need to go out and do something on your own. So I just started looking for a business and ran into a friend at a New Year's Eve party who told me about a business that he was looking at and said, well, we can do it together. So I went and looked at this company called Jugtown Mountain Smokehouse, which was the original name. And it was a small, 5,000 square foot smoked meat facility. And I said, Chris, this thing is too small. Either you do it or I'll do it. So he called back a couple of weeks later and said, I'm not going to do it if you're not going to do it. And so I kind of jumped in.
You mentioned that you were entrepreneurial, like you just felt that you had it in your blood. How did you know?
Well, having struggled through school and been in a lot of academic environments where I wasn't motivated or excited, I always knew. I was the kid that, in high school they said, well, you just got to wait till the guy gets to college before he does something. And then I go to college and they said, well, you're just going to have to wait till after college. So it was in the small business environment that I felt like my brain woke up. What I say to people is my IQ goes up and down in direct proportion to how close my butt is next to a fire. So if I'm at high risk, I get very smart. As soon as I start working for somebody else and it's not mine, I just don't have the same mental acumen or focus or interest to solve problems, to try things, and my creativity just kind of goes down if it's not mine.
Did you have any influence from your mother or father in the business world at all? What did they do?
My mother was taking care of 9 kids, and my father was an investment banker, in New York. Neither of them had direct entrepreneurial experience. I think my father taught me how to reach out and connect with people, networking. My mother was more of the one who taught me that I could do it. And if she was, 30 years old now moving into a career, there isn't a company in America that she couldn't run well. And even though she wasn't in the business environment, she taught all those principles of focus and will and desire about, getting whatever it is you want to do.
So moving from your family life to this natural meat company, how did it then go from Jugtown to Applegate Farms?
Well, we were doing nitrate-free product and product that was not using phosphates or, adding water to the product. So we were in a very high-quality product, but we hadn't migrated yet to antibiotic-free or organic meat. So the business started to grow, and we had these old gravity pit smokehouses, which are just the old-style smokehouses, which had been there for years, and we got those smokehouses going so fast and running so often that we basically lit 2,000 pounds of bacon on fire one night when it was smoking overnight, and the whole back end of the business burnt down. So those are one of those seminal moments when you think the world's coming to an end after you've worked so hard. In 3 weeks, we had that back up and running, and this is with USDA inspections and controls. But in the interim, we had to tell our customers to go to our competitors to get product. And we had to go to our competitors to have the stuff we needed made in the interim. So all of a sudden, we started getting these shipments in from our competitors or different people. And we're like, well, this stuff's better than what we do. And at that moment, I kind of realized there was tons of production facilities doing smoked meats and other type of meat. What there really wasn't was a brand out there that was dedicated to focusing on producing healthy organic or natural meat that was focused on the consumer.
So it was all by accident, in a way, that you discovered that you wanted to be in the natural organic meat business as a result of your smokehouse burning down and getting the meats from your competitors.
Everything we've done, we've learned by mistake or as an accident. the percentage that we knew what we were going to do when we grew up and actually executed to that level, the day-to-day is all 90% stumbling.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Stephen McDonald, the founder of Applegate Farms, a natural organic meat company that sells products to Whole Foods and other natural food stores around the United States. Walk me through the life of a cow in your company. Let's say you're a cow in Uruguay. How does it end up on my dinner plate in New York?
When you say no antibiotics, you're basically saying they'll never be sick, which means you have to completely change the way that you treat them. The difference between organic meat and antibiotic meat is they're raised exactly the same way. One is fed organic grain, certified organic grain, and the other one is not. But in all cases, you never use antibiotics, and you're never using animal byproducts. So the analogy I use is if you've got children, if your kids are going to go to a daycare center, and you are going to say you will never give those kids any antibiotics if they get sick, there are a couple of things you're going to do differently. You're going to make sure you feed the kid very well because you don't have the backup of giving an antibiotic. So nutritionally, you're going to focus, and in this case, it means not using animal byproducts, which are cheap meats, but very good grains. You're also going to house them differently. So you want them to have access to fresh air. You want them to have sunlight. You want them to exercise. They need room to exercise. And so the physical environment is much more attuned to supporting the immune system and building the immune system of each of the animals. And then the third piece of it is sanitation and control. So what needs to happen, these barns need to rest. So every once in a while, you have no birds or animals if they're in houses, and let the natural process of germs disinfect itself and then restore it. If you try to cram the animals up too tightly and accelerate their growth with hormones or steroids, feed them lousy feed, you're going to get systemic diseases. On the humane issue, what we feel is that these animals ultimately are dedicating themselves to becoming food for humans. And our responsibility is to honor that process, respect those animals, and give them disease-free environments that are healthy and ones in which their immune systems can support their growth.
So they go from this life of luxury to the slaughterhouse in, let's say, Uruguay. And then, Right. Then what happens?
Then what happens is we will take whatever we're making, if we're making roast beef or we're making beef hot dogs or whatever, we'll send the appropriate meat to the different processors who then receive our raw material, and then they have strict quality control standards. They can only run this product first because you can't be running commercial product and then our stuff without doing a whole sanitation process in the interim. So we're usually brought in, and we can take the date code of a product that you buy in the store, and we can trace it back to the lot that it was made at the processor. We can also trace it back to the lot when that animal was slaughtered, and we can also trace it back then to the farms. So traceability is a very important issue for our consumers and for us to know what we're actually receiving at the end of the day.
So take me back to the very beginning. Before your smokehouse burnt down, how did you fund it initially? Did you have outside capital or was it all your own?
I closed in July of 1987, which was right before the October crash, stock market crash. I went to a bank who ended up loaning me 120% of the purchase price. So I had $35,000 left over in my bank account, which I was able to use to start buying inventory and paying payroll. And so as it turned out, I never put a dollar of my own or anybody else's into the business.
And why were they willing to lend you money?
I had a local banker, this old street guy named Bill Purcell, who, you know, basically loaned money to gas stations and small grocery stores. I went back to him and, several years later, I go, why did you do that? Because, you know, of course, after the 90s and the whole, you know, banking issues, everything now is loaned on ratios and a banker has no leeway to kind of, you know, give the money that they want just because they like you. He turned to me and he said, he just said, I know you're going to be successful. And he went out on a flyer and that's what got me started. And when I go meet now these big bankers who want to help me grow my business, I always try to remind him of that guy who, you know, never made it into the big banking world, but was, for an entrepreneur, exactly what you need to get started.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Stephen McDonald, the founder of Applegate Farms, a natural organic meat company that sells products to Whole Foods and other natural food stores around the United States. We've been talking about the early days of the business, and I'd like to know how you went about selling the product to customers initially.
The story that I remember most in the early days was my uncle, who was an investment banker in New York, had sold A&P to a German company. And so I was like, great. Well, you know, I called him up and said, can you get me a meeting with this, you know, with A&P? They're a huge chain, you know, here in the East. And he said, sure. So he called up the president, who then got me a meeting with the meat buyer. So I go traipsing into the meat buyer and sit down and say, hi, I'm Steve McDonald. You know, my uncle, blah, blah, blah. And I, like an idiot, told him, you know, where, how I had gotten to him. And he turned to me before the meeting had started and he stopped me and he goes, listen, son, if you think that I am ever, or this chain will ever buy a single pound of your product because you came from the president of the company, you are sorely mistaken. Now, I have one piece of advice for you. Pick up your stuff and get out and don't ever come back. And it's true now as it was then. In the meat business, you work yourself up the ladder. You go in the ground floor and you earn your stripes. And that was a great lesson, although it was kind of shocking at the time.
You've been humbled by this A&P experience. So do you now just call the founder of Whole Foods, or do you get in through the butcher, through the meat department?
We were just starting out. They were just starting out. We were kind of like minds and just became kind of friends. And they started requesting meat that was raised without any antibiotics at all. So then we started to go out and find farmers and set up growing systems that raise those animals without antibiotics.
I want to turn to your initial partner, Chris Ely, whose father had owned the smokehouse that you acquired. And I was wondering if there are any partner issues between you and Chris.
The reason this company happened in large part was because of how easy that relationship has been. He allowed me from day one to be in control and totally saw that I was a vehicle for him because he didn't have the background I had to help this company realize its dream. So doesn't mean we don't go at it on several occasions. There was never a point where we came to, had discussions saying we're not going to work together. It's just been a wonderful, easy relationship, and I know how rare that is to find.
And it's partly easier because he relinquished control to you and he didn't have an ego about that, because you do like to be in control.
No, that's true. And he saw that and very wisely stayed away from it. He, like me, is married to a very strong woman. So both of us, you know our boundaries in certain areas, and we figured that out pretty early on.
So you're humbled at home, but at the workplace, you like to stretch your arms a little more.
I'm way humbled at home, and I'm often humbled in the workplace, but I can kind of push back a little bit more in the workplace.
And so your wife, what's her name?
Jill Carney.
She was there throughout the growing years of the business.
She was there and never was her gift to me. Her father's a sculptor. So what she brought to me was an understanding of small business and a love of small business. And she was in the movie business, so she was in a very stylish, fancy business with lots of attention and distractions. And here she was living in Los Angeles at the time. She would fly back east to hook up with this guy who had this small smoked meat company in New Jersey, and none of her friends in Los Angeles could understand what that was about. What that was about for her was getting back to her father being a sculptor and being working with his hands and working in a real environment. So that support, knowing that I was okay, because when I bought the business, I was so nervous about doing it and so unsure about what I was doing. I didn't tell any of my friends. I just did it. And that validation was very important. She now is getting much more involved in the company and helps out on the text on the back of the boxes are all her words. And she is a writer, and she has a way of writing our message that I think keys into our consumers far better than anybody else I've seen.
We're getting to the current stage of the company, and I want to ask you how your role has changed from the very, very early days of getting this off the ground to now a manager of how many people?
We've got about 65.
So how are you as a manager in addition to being an entrepreneur?
Well, I'm great, but you'd have to ask the employees to get the honest opinion.
Well, what would they say?
I've had a lot of employees work for me for a long period of time, and I've only lost one employee, someone who was in customer service, who I didn't really want to lose. I feel that ultimately I need to hire a number two.
So and you're not threatened by that at all?
I'm totally threatened by that. I think I have way too much of my identity wrapped up in this company, which is what I've been doing nonstop. I think as the company gets bigger, to have the owner and founder that wrapped up in the business is not healthy.
And do you have advisors telling you that, or are you internally recognizing that yourself?
I don't have a board of directors, and everybody's telling me I need to, and I will eventually do that. You know, this is more from an internal reflection than it is other people. The business is going very quickly through its teenage phase. And so if you have been a entrepreneur for 18 years like I have, it's like raising your children up into the teenage years and realizing that you can't be a shrink to your own teenage child, that at some point somebody else needs to step in and do that. And there's a function there. Doesn't mean you're going to stop being the parent. You're always going to be the parent. But the child needs more than just the mom or the dad around. And so it's kind of coming into that realization.
Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Stephen McDonald, the founder of Applegate Farms. To learn more about the show, visit our website at fromscratchradio.org, where you can download a podcast on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, or join us on Facebook. I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch.